on the issues of tefillah. We had three shiurim so far. This week is our fourth shiur. And I got a lot of emails this week where women requested that we talk not only about Hilchos Tefillah, but we should really be focusing some attention on Chanukah, because today, after all, is Chanukah. So today we're going to have a shiur that integrates both Tefillah and Chanukah, and is a very important topic, as you'll see. It's something that rides with us throughout the various aspects of our lives throughout the year, and it's something we should be aware of. I'm not sure everybody is, but let's begin as follows. The Shulchan Aruch writes in Aruch Chaim, Hilchos Bedikas Chametz, Siman Tav Lamed Aleph, Yizaher Kol Adam, that's number Aleph on the source sheet, Yizaher Kol Adam, each and every person should be careful that on the night of Bedikas Chametz, the night when you're about to perform your mitzvah, Shelo Yaschil B'Shum Malacha, you should not be doing any other activity. Once the zman, once the time comes in that you are able to do the Bedikas Chametz, you should not be involved or engaged in anything else, Ad Sheyivdok, until you do the mitzvah of Bedikas Chametz. Now, what exactly does Malacha mean? What is entailed when we say you're not allowed to do Malacha? What do we consider to be a Malacha is a major discussion. There is a contemporary discussion. You know, the rabbi before Pesach goes ahead and sells the chametz every day, every night, and has many hours, and spends a lot of time in the office meeting with people to try to take care of their Pesach needs and their Pesach questions. So does that mean also the rabbi in the night of Bedikas Chametz after Maariv, when there's a whole large audience of people, he's not allowed to sell the chametz that night because he should be running home to do the Bedikas Chametz? Anyway, all kinds of questions, but simply the Shulchan Aruch writes, one is not allowed to be engaged in any kind of malacha, in any kind of activity at the time when they are supposed to be doing the Bedikas Chametz. And this applies not only to Bedikas Chametz, but we travel a little further to the mitzvah of shaking the Dalad Minim on Sukkos. So the Mishnah says in Masechta Sukkah Daf Lamed Ches, let's say you have somebody who's traveling for Yontif. So they go the first half of Yontif. Those who are in my stage of life are still traveling back and forth to in-laws and parents. Thank God we have a job, and I don't travel anymore. Parents got to come to us. It makes it much easier. So the Mishnah says in Masechta Sukkah, you have somebody who's traveling to the in-laws, and then they're going back and forth to the parents, and then on Chol HaMoed, so they have a flight from California to New York at 5 o'clock in the morning on Chol HaMoed Sukkos, and they were not able to shake the lulav at that time because it was too early. So now when they get to the in-laws and they come to the five towns, so they're going to perform the mitzvah, they're going to do what they have to do. But as any mother-in-law would do, when you show up to somebody's house, when your children come in from out of town, the first thing you do is not shove the lulav and esrog in their face. The first thing you do is offer them something to eat, and you give the grandchildren some cookies, and you give everybody something that they should feel good, and then you deal with whatever has to be dealt with. So says the Mishnah in Sukkah, Misha Babaderech, somebody who's traveling on Chol HaMoed Sukkos, I wasn't able to bring my Dalad Minim on the airplane, and I wasn't able to shake before I left. It was too early. So when you enter into the in-law's house, yitol al shulchano. What does that mean? Yitol al shulchano. You should shake the lulav on the table. So what does that mean, al shulchano? You should stand up on the table and shake the lulav? Obviously, it's not what it means. So what it means is, you have to make sure that you perform your mitzvah of Dalad Minim before you accept the food that the mother-in-law is obviously going to put out for you. I'm only speaking from experience. That's what my mother-in-law does. We come to the house, mother-in-law puts out food, but it's not the right thing to do, says the Gemara. Although it is the right thing for her to do, it's not the right thing for the guests to accept that first. The first thing you should do is take care of your obligation of shaking the Dalad Minim. Rashi says, Im shachach v'lo nato kodem achila. What if a person forgets and gets very carried away? The mother-in-law is serving you a whole delicious dinner, a whole delicious lunch. How can you not accept? How can you not eat something? After all, you don't want to make her feel bad. You don't want to say, you know, you don't care for everything she put out for you. But after all, says Rashi, if you make a mistake and you start to eat, Sarach lahafsik su'udaso v'lita lulav, says Rashi, you have to stop eating in the middle, go take care of your mitzvah of shaking the Dalad Minim, and then you can come back to the table and enjoy all the food that was put out for you. Again, the Shulchan Aruch reiterates this in Hilchos Dalad Minim, Siman Tav Reish Nun Beis. The Shulchan Aruch says one is not allowed to be engaged in eating a meal at the time when they're supposed to be shaking the Dalad Minim. And this is something that the Shulchan Aruch takes very seriously. And the reason why is because a person should not be involved in anything else at the time that a mitzvah opportunity comes their way. Once the zman of the mitzvah comes, you should be only focused on fulfilling your obligation of taking that mitzvah, of making sure you do it properly, and you should not be engaged in any other activity or eating at that time. This is something that the Rama reminds us of in Hilchos Purim as well. Siman Tav Reish Tadi Beis. The Rama there talks about eating or drinking or being involved in something else before you go ahead and perform your mitzvah of Mikra Megillah on Purim. Now, this is a lot more difficult because on Purim, that's not just you wake up in the morning, you shake the lulav, and you're done. On Purim, you've been fasting the entire day of Tanis Esther, and now you go ahead and you have to listen to the Mikra Megillah at night. Not everybody's able to make it to shul. Some people stay at home, and they have to have somebody come and lay the Megillah for them later on. So you're going to tell somebody they've been fasting all day long, and now they have to wait to eat something. They have to wait to break their fast until after they hear the Megillah. That's a little bit more complicated, but the Ramah says, unless it's an extenuating circumstance, a person should not eat anything or even taste anything before doing the Mikra Megillah on Purim night and Purim day. So if you're going to go to a later Minyan Purim day, you're not allowed to have breakfast before you hear the Megillah. You have to go and hear the Megillah first, and only afterward can you have whatever you're going to have. We're going to talk later about where coffees and breakfast fit into this whole story, but at face value, the Shulchan Aruch says, number one, by Bedikas Chametz, number two, by Netilas Lulav, number three, by Mikra Megillah, that we have to be very careful about this. There's a very famous issue that comes up every year on Rosh Hashanah. This has been a debate for the last 200, 250 years about what is the story regarding eating before listening to Tkiyas Shofar. Now, this is a major, major problem. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach talks about it in the Sefer Nishmas Avram. You look at number Gimel, Rav Shlomo Zalman says, Kava Alai Nafshi. He says, I am so pained. It gives me a lot of agmas nefesh. Eich efshe lahashir sefer Torah ala bima. How could it be that on Rosh Hashanah we leave the sefer Torah on the bima, and we throw a talus over the sifrei Torah that they shouldn't be in disgrace? Vilolechas habaisa. Then we all take a nice little break for an hour in the middle of davening. Kedei lekadosh vilecha matam, to go home and have a nice kiddush. Va'adayin lo kimu mitzvos hayom. And we still haven't fulfilled our primary obligation of Rosh Hashanah, which is the blowing of the shofar. Shehu is Sorus the Tshuva. That is the focal point of our entire day, is the fact that we're going to blow the shofar, and yet we haven't yet fulfilled our obligation. We put the Sifrei Torah down on the bima, leave the shofar laying there. We all go home to have a good time. Says Rav Shlomo Zalman, I can't understand it. V'ofechas midas hadin l'midas harachamim. This is the one day of year when you need God's mercy. This is the one day when you need God's rachmanis. And now, what are you doing? You're showing him, we'll take a break. We'll wait off on you. Even though the shofar is the focal point of the day, but not right now. I first got to have my kiddush, first got to have the coffee, first got to have everything else, and then I'll come back and get to you later. Says Rav Shlomo Zalman, Kava alai nafshi, this pains me to see this, to see what people are doing, to see what the communities are doing. This gives me a lot of agmas nefesh. Again, we'll talk in a minute exactly what the rationale is for the communities that do it, but we should understand that the same way the Shulchan Aruch writes by Mikra Megillah and by shofar and by lulav and everything else, so too by shofar. You're not allowed to do anything else. You're not allowed to go ahead and have a kiddush unless you have already performed your mitzvah. It reminds me, Rav Shlomo Zalman's lashon here is, Hofechas midas adin lemidas harachamim. The one day a year that you want God's, you want to evoke his midas harachamim, is the one day that you're going to do backwards, to do the opposite and show him how you don't care, to show him how you're not careful about what you would normally be careful about on the other day of the year. So my father always points out that Simchas Torah is the day that we celebrate the Torah. Simchas Torah is the day when we show how much we're committed, how much we're going to listen to all the laws. And he always points out that Simchas Torah is probably the day when more people violate Isurim, more so than any other day of the year, things that we would never violate in any other day. Why, for example, he says, most people probably would be careful not to talk during Kriyas HaTorah. On a regular Shabbos, you try to be quiet, maybe you speak in between the aliyahs, but Simchas Torah, there's so much pandemonium, so everybody's talking. Most people would never eat on a Shabbos morning without Kiddush. But Simchas Torah, because we've extended the celebration so long and we don't get home till whatever time, so people are going in, they're going out, they're having food without making Kiddush. People are sitting down while we have Sifrei Torah, walking around the room. Also a clear violation of what the Shulchan Aruch says. So it's interesting, it's just fascinating, that on Simchas Torah, the one day that we celebrate our commitment to the Torah is the one day that we violate things we would otherwise never do. So over here, Rav Shlomo Zalman writes the same thing. The one day that we want to have Midas HaRachamim is the one day that we do something that's a practice that's very questionable. So this Dechemed is an encyclopedia that was written in the late 1800s. This Dechemed passed away in 1904. He was a fascinating personality. This Dechemed was born actually in Yerushalayim. His name was Chaim Chizkiyahu Medini, one of the great Gedolim of the late 1800s. So the Dechemed had a personal family tragedy. I think his father or mother, somebody passed away, and they were the breadwinner. I don't remember exactly the details, but something like that. And it was at a very young age, and he realized he wouldn't have the opportunity to sustain the family. He didn't know what to do. He was a very young child, so he moved to Istanbul. He had some wealthy Sephardisha relatives, and he decided that the relatives would probably pick up the tab and take care of him. And he was mistaken. He moved to the Sephardim in Istanbul to his cousins, and they did not take care of him. So he had to go and find a job, and that was the beginning of his career. He found a job in the rabbinate, and then he moved to another rabbanus, and whatever it was, that was really what got him going on his career of being an influential personality, an interesting trajectory that went through his younger years in his life. So anyway, the Stechemed writes also, he was a Svardi, the Stechemed writes that, Shamati, I've heard, Sheyesh Makomos Eitzel Achenu Ashkenazim. He says, I'm not an Ashkenazi, I don't daven in the shuls, but I've heard, he says, that in the Ashkenazic shul, Shabi Yom Rosh Hashanah Achar Shachris, that on Rosh Hashanah, after they daven, Yotzimi Beis HaKnesses, they leave the shul, Vishosim Tea, can you believe it? They go home and they have a tea or a coffee? V'chozrim L'shma Kriya Sefer Torah U'Tkiyas, then they come back after having the Kiddush and the tea and the coffee, and then they hear the Tkiyas Shofar, V'hayah Dabar Tamua Be'enai, first I'm ever hearing such a thing. Who would do that? Says the Stechemed, I've never heard of this. Somebody would go home and have Kiddush and a tea before they go and hear the Tkiyas Shofar. Ach, he says, Kishem Shemitzvah Lomar Dabar HaNishma, the Gemara says that the same way somebody has a mitzvah to give tochacha to those who will listen, it's also a mitzvah not to say something when you know people are not going to accept what you say. So he says, I kept my mouth shut, I didn't say anything, I know I'm not going to win this fight. I don't understand it exactly, but he says this is what they do. And he goes on a whole lengthy discussion about whether or not it's right or it's wrong. But this is something, all the reason we're pointing this out is because it's something that at least we should think about. Again, if a person has to eat, they have to eat. But it's something we should think about. On the face value, it should fit into the pattern that the Shulchan Aruch says by every other mitzvah, that we don't have a right to eat anything before performing a mitzvah once the time of the mitzvah has come. We don't have a right to do that. The great gadol in America before Rav Moshe Feinstein was, anybody know? What? What? Rav Henkin. Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin was the great gadol in America until he passed away in the 1970s. So Rav Henkin, they say this was one of the big, big battles that he fought, that he wouldn't allow anybody to eat before Tzkiyos on Rosh Hashanah. He thought that was a cardinal sin, a terrible thing to do. In fact, they say that when Rav Henkin was an older man, and unfortunately he had dementia or whatever it was, and he wasn't with his mind at all, he didn't have a complete understanding of what it was that he was saying or thinking. So they say that if he would come into Rav Henkin's room at the end of his life, he would hear him mumbling, don't eat before you make Tzkiyos. Like, that was obviously such a focus in his life that even when he no longer understood what he was saying, that's what he was talking about, because this was something that he took on. This was a battle he decided to fight for. I once read a story that they wrote on the yard site of Rav Henkin. So they wrote a little biography, 2 pages, about a little bit of his life. So I decided to read it. I don't really know much about him. So they said in there that Rav Henkin did not give smicha often. I think it said he only gave smicha to 2 or 3 talmidim that he thought were really potential for greatness. So he gave them smicha and he signed off that he agrees that they can be leaders of a community. So Rav Henkin said, but your smicha is conditional. And it's conditional on 3 different conditions. Condition number 1, I forgot exactly what it was. Condition number 2, he said, is that as a rabbi, you're never allowed to be mekabel Shabbos even a minute early. Why not? You'll say, hi, Tosefes Shabbos. He said, because the job of a rabbi is to be available for people to ask shailas, and if you're going to be mekabel Shabbos early and go to shul and hide yourself away to learn, nobody's going to be able to ask you a shaila in that half an hour when you should be at home available for people to knock on your door and ask a shaila. So that was a very fascinating insistence that he had. And he said, if you're mekabel Shabbos early, I revoke the smicha. You don't have a right to say you have smicha from me. And condition number 3 was that if you dare allow anyone in your shul to eat before you blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, your smicha is revoked. That was his 3rd condition. Again, of all things in the Torah, this was the thing that he decided to make the smicha conditional on. So this was obviously something that he fought for. However, as we know, the practice in many, many communities, and certainly in many of the yeshivas, is that they have Kiddush before they go ahead and blow the Tkiyah Shofar. I think in our community we don't, right? I think in this community we don't. So, you know, it's a very machmer shul here. We don't have Kiddush before we blow the Shofar. So what is the reason? So the Talmidim of the Chafetz Chaim explain that the reason why the Chafetz Chaim and others allowed it, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter allowed it, is because in the yeshivas they generally daven until 2 or 3 o'clock, and the davening goes so long. So if you're going to make people stay in shul till 2, 3 o'clock without giving them the chance, the opportunity to have something to eat, something to drink, they're not going to have the proper kavana, they're not going to have the requisite intent while they daven, while they listen to the Tkiyah Shofar, and therefore we allow it in order that it should be for the purpose of blowing the shofar. There are some who argue that since on Rosh Hashanah you have such an Emes Adin, since the fear of the Rosh Hashanah is over your head, you're not going to make a mistake and forget about doing the Tkiyah Shofar, you're not going to make a mistake and get carried away with your eating and not come back to shul. So that's what some suggest. Again, maybe that was true in Europe. I don't believe that most of us walk around the Rosh Hashanah with such a fear that we would never do an Aveira. You know, I'm not sure. Maybe yes, maybe no. But this is something that, it's a very questionable heter. And over the last 250 years, it's been debated back and forth. But again, at best, it's a bidyeved. If a person can go ahead and daven without having the need to go and make Kiddush, obviously that's the best case scenario. Or if you're davening in a shul where they finish davening at 12:30, so it's just a half an hour later than they would finish on a regular Shabbos, there's no reason why you need to have the Kiddush. If you're davening in a place where they daven until 2 or 3 o'clock, that's where the whole discussion comes in, because there, maybe we're concerned that a person won't be able to have the requisite kavana that they need for the Musaf on Rosh Hashanah. Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu, Melech HaOlam, Shehakol Nehiyeh B'Dvaro. We mentioned before this Dechemed, I was so inspired by your bringing water, I decided to bring my own. We mentioned before this Dechemed has an encyclopedia, so in the encyclopedia of this Dechemed, he brings something fascinating. He says, there's a practice that we know is very prevalent, that on the day of a wedding, a chasan and kala fast. And it's not exactly clear why they fast. Some say the reason why is because the Yerushalmi says, a chasan and kala mochlin lo avonoseihem, that they have a mechilas avonos on the day of the wedding. So the same way on Yom Kippur, you get a mechilas avonos and you fast, so too on the day of the wedding, you fast as well. That's what some suggest. Others suggest maybe the reason why is because, look, we don't want anyone later on to cast aspersions against the marriage and say, oh, they weren't really married because he didn't really have in mind to marry her and she didn't really have in mind to accept. So we say, we don't want anyone coming along later and saying, oh, he was drunk at the time of the wedding or she was drunk at the time of the wedding, and really we can question whether or not they got married. No one's going to eat all day long. And this way, there's no question about it that for sure, nobody was drunk, nobody was getting sidetracked, nobody was doing anything else. Everybody was paying attention and focusing on what they're supposed to do. A lot of reasons are given why the chasan and kala fast on the day of the wedding, but this Dechemed quotes a very new reason from the Rokeach. The Rokeach is one of the Gdolei HaRishonim, lived in the 1100s, one of the Talmidim of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. So the Rokeach says the reason why is because it follows the pattern of all the other mitzvahs. The same way a person is not allowed to eat before blowing the shofar, before shaking the lulav, before doing anything else, so too, if today is the day that you're supposed to be getting married, you should have nothing else on your mind other than getting married. You shouldn't be going ahead and being involved in eating. We're afraid maybe you're going to miss the chance to get married. Now again, highly unlikely when you invite hundreds of guests and your whole family is with you at the hall, highly unlikely that you're actually going to forget. But again, in the times of the Rokeach, they didn't have the arrangements that we have today. You didn't arrange this months and months in advance and invite hundreds of guests. You made a little kichel and herring, and that was the meal, and that was the wedding, and that was it. So it's very likely that somebody can get carried away and forget about the fact that they're supposed to be showing up to their wedding tonight, especially when you're getting married at 10 years old. You're not so responsible, right? But again, this is the reason that the Rokeach gives. The Pischei Tshuva in Yerodea takes this a little bit further, and he says, on the day of a bris, a father or the mohel, whose obligation it is to make sure that their child has a bris milah or that you do the bris milah properly, the father and the mohel are not supposed to eat before they go ahead and perform the mitzvah bris milah. And similarly, the Pischei Tshuva writes, on the day of a pidyon haben, a parent who's supposed to be taking care of the mitzvah pidyon haben for their child should not be involved in eating before they go ahead and perform the mitzvah pidyon haben, which is very relevant because quite often we have a pidyon haben later on in the day. It's a question in general, why do we do that? Why don't we have a pidyon haben in the morning the same way we would have a bris early in the morning? A question. But that is the practice, and that's why this is a question. Do you really have the right to eat, or should we say, well, today is the day of the pidyon haben, not supposed to be getting carried away with the fact that that you're eating? And finally, we come to our topic, and that is on Neiros Chanukah. The Shulchan Aruch says very clearly, the Magen Avraham talks about it, you look in number Hey, Simon Tafresh, Ayin Beis, the Mechaber, there in the Magen Avraham, right, Tov Lahadlik Kodem HaAchila, a person is supposed to light candles before they go ahead and eat. The Maharshal Kasav, the Magen Avraham quotes in the Maharshal, Ta'afilu Lilmod Aser Mishehigi Azmanu, you're not even permitted to learn or have a public shiur at the time when you're supposed to be lighting Hanukkah candles. Now again, it doesn't mean all day long. It means from 5 o'clock or 4:30 these days when you're supposed to be lighting candles, whatever time you use. You're not supposed to be engaged in anything else at that time. You're supposed to be only focused on making sure that your Hanukkah candles are going to be lit on time, making sure everybody's ready, and not delaying the mitzvah at all. V'afilu hischil, says the Magen Avraham, even if a person had started to do something else or to eat or to be engaged in some other business, says the Magen Avraham, posik, you're supposed to stop even in the middle, and this is quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, in the Mishneh Berurah as well, that we are supposed to be careful not to be engaged in eating, not to be engaged in anything else at the time of the Hadlakas Neiros Chanukah. Now this poses a major, major problem. In our shul, as I said, we're major machmirim in the shul, we don't have a kiddush before Tkiyah Shofar, and we're major tzaddikim also, because to have a wedding on Chanukah causes major, major problems for everybody. It causes major problems for this simple reason. Number one, you're not allowed to light Chanukah candles in a wedding hall. That's not your house, it's not your bais, it's not their bais, it's not anywhere. You're not allowed to light Chanukah candles in a wedding hall. That's clear. So what do? You're invited to a wedding, the wedding is 6 o'clock, but you can only light candles at 5 o'clock now. So what am I supposed to do? So either you come late to the wedding, or you don't make a wedding on Chanukah. It's a really, really questionable thing to do. In our shul, we're such tzaddikim, we have two weddings on Sunday. Sunday is no longer a problem because Sunday is already the last day of Hanukkah. There's no more Neiros Hanukkah. So they're very nice in our shul that they make us not have to deal with the issue. But in many other communities, if you can imagine, they have this problem, and it's always a problem. Every year, people have the same issue. What do? We're supposed to be going, again, people have an issue, they go on a flight, or they're going here, they're going there, they're doing all kinds of things. Someone talked to me that they're going to Israel tonight, and they have a 6 o'clock flight. Why do you make a 6 o'clock flight on Hanukkah when you know you're supposed to be lighting candles at 5 o'clock? What do you want me to do? So he says, well, what should I do? Can I light in the airport? No, you can't light in the airport. How can you light in the airport? You can't light on the plane either, obviously. But this is a major question, and we have to consider it before we make the arrangements. Again, you want to get a 12, 1 o'clock in the morning flight where you can light at home and make sure you do your obligation is one thing, but to go and make arrangements and be involved in other things is a very, very difficult halachic dilemma that comes up every year. Yeah?
What about if you were out of town waiting, you're in a hotel? Can you light in a hotel before that is your welcome at this time? It's not your regular house, but that's...
Yeah, so that's a great question. What do you do if you're invited to an out-of-town wedding and now you're in a hotel? Now, the hotels, most of them have a policy you're not allowed to light candles in the room. So, if that's the policy, you're not allowed to light candles. To light in the lobby is certainly not permissible. That's not your bias. My father, what he usually suggests to people who have that circumstance, who have that predicament, he usually tells them to buy an electric menorah and to plug it in your room and turn on the bulb without making a bracha. Now, again, if you're going to have only an LED bulb, it's a little bit not as good, so now it becomes more challenging. To find an electric menorah in the first place is not so easy. To find an electric menorah with a real bulb is certainly not so simple, but that's what my father usually suggests people to do. Again, you have no choice. What are you going to do? You know, you can't light Hanukkah candles in the room because the hotel doesn't allow it, and you can't light in the hall because that's not your bias. So it's a problematic thing. Again, it doesn't mean we shouldn't go to the wedding. It just means we have to think about how we're going to deal with the issue. And then... to say, then you go to the wedding, so you'll say, okay, the wedding starts at 5 o'clock, so I'll go to the wedding, and when I get home, I'll deal with it. Now, it causes a number of issues. Number one, because you're not really allowed to eat or be engaged in anything else before you light the Hanukkah candle. So here you are not just engaged in eating, you're engaged in feasting and dancing and doing everything else at a wedding and eating from a smorgasbord when you're certainly not supposed to be doing that. So you'll say, well, when we get home, the rest of the family members will remind you. I don't know about you, but sometimes I come home from a wedding, and I'm very exhausted, and I get home a lot later than I expected, and I fall asleep. Or my kids woke up, and I come home, and the babysitter says, you know, you got to take care of the kids. Kids were up. And I go to lay down with my son, and the next thing I know, it's 2 o'clock in the morning when I wake up, and I realize that I fell asleep a lot longer than I expected to. So this is something you really have to plan for in advance. If you have an occasion that's going to make sure that you're not going to be home at the time of, that's going to make you not be able to be available at the time of Hadlakas Neiros Chanukah. On Chanukah, you have to be very careful about that, and you have to think about that in advance, how exactly you're going to deal with it. Just before we take more questions, let me just add one more point, and that is the Sharat Zion in number Vav here. Sharat Zion is written by the Mishneh Berurah. Sharat Zion writes, not only is there a prohibition to eat at the time of Hadlakas Neiros Chanukah or Tkiyas Shofar or Mikra Megillah or anything else, but even a half an hour before the Zman as well, one is not allowed to be engaged in any of those activities, which makes it even more difficult. And certainly now, because now the... because now the time of year when we light Neiros Chanukah is, let's say, 4:30 or 5 o'clock, and many families want to all light together as a family. So you're allowed to start lighting at 5 o'clock, for argument's sake, but the husband or the wife or whoever it is not going to come home, or the kids from school are not going to come home until 7:30 or until 6:30. So we don't want to light the Hanukkah candles until everybody's here together. Many families want to do that. So we always had this issue in my house, because my father was very careful to tell us that nobody should ever eat before we light Hanukkah candles, but yet he never came home before 7 o'clock at night on a good day. So what were we supposed to do? We all got home at 4:30. You know, Hanukkah, of course, they let the kids out early when they're, you know, the day that we are supposed to be learning even more, and the day that we're not supposed to be eating, so they let the kids out earlier. So everybody came home at 4:30, and then we were sitting around from 4:30 to 7:30. What are you going to do? Can't do anything. You can't eat. Can't do anything. So my father always told us, I understand that you want to wait around for me because you want to be respectful to me and we want to light as a family, but it's better that you light on your own at 4:30, 5 o'clock and go ahead and do everything else that you're going to do, and I'll light by myself at 7. You can all join me at 7, but it's better that you all light on your own. Now, again, takes away a little bit from the Hanukkah experience, but at the same time, if you read the sources carefully, it's clear that you're really not supposed to be engaged in many other things at the time when we have an obligation to light the Neiros Chanukah, and even, says the Sharat Zion, even a half an hour before this Zman HaMitzvah as well, we are not supposed to be involved in other things. And Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach points out, you look at number Zion, Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes, that since we know that women are just as obligated in Neres Chanukah as men are. As we know, the reason for the Neres Chanukah is because we had a miracle. The Gemara says, "Af hein haya ba'osa hanes." The women were involved in the miracle just as equally as the men were, and therefore they have an obligation to commemorate the miracle the same way the men have an obligation. And therefore, says Reb Shlomo Zalman, since a woman has the equal obligation to light the Neres Chanukah as a man does, ha'iser lecha v'lasas malacha chatzisha lefnei hadlaka, says Reb Shlomo Zalman, this prohibition of eating a half an hour before the sun comes in, before the time to light Neres Chanukah, nohe gam v'nashim, says Reb Shlomo Zalman, it applies equally to men and to women because we both have the obligation equally to perform the mitzvah of Neres Chanukah. Now, just while we're on that subject, there is a major debate about women lighting Neres Chanukah. So the Mishnah Berurah writes that, again, I don't know if we have any Sfaradim in the room. Most Sfaradim have the practice that they only light one Chanukah menorah for the whole family. But Ashkenazim have the practice that each member of the family lights their own candles. So that's generally what most Ashkenazim do. If we can afford it, that's the practice that we have. So the question is, what about when a woman is married? So the Mishnah Berurah has a very surprising chiddush. The Mishnah Berurah writes that we have a principle of ishto kugufo, which means a woman is considered to be, once she's married, she's considered to be like her husband, so she's subsumed under his lighting, and therefore she doesn't have to light on her own. Rav Soloveitchik thought that was a very questionable chiddush. Again, it's nothing to do with feminism, it's just he said it was a very questionable assumption. Do we say that ishto kugufo means that a woman doesn't have to go hear the shofar? Does it mean that a woman doesn't have to go ahead and shake the lulav? No. The husband did his mitzvah, but the woman has to do her mitzvah too. So the same way that a woman goes ahead and listens to the shofar and we don't say her husband took care of it for her, and the same way that a woman shakes the lulav and we don't say that the husband took care of it for her, so too Rav Soloveitchik argued he doesn't understand why here, by Hanukkah candles, a woman should get away with it just because, not get away with it, but why should we say that a woman is subsumed by the lighting that her husband does? Why does that make sense? So again, the Mishnah Berurah was of the opinion that a married woman does not have to light, but the Rav Soloveitchik was of the opinion that he didn't think it was right. In our family, again, my mother makes the rules in the house, not my father. So in our family, when my parents got married, although my father follows Rav Soloveitchik's opinion that a woman who's married should light her own candles, and that's what he always told us in Shir, and that's what he always spoke about in our house, he never says any of his own opinions. He always lets things happen the way they happen. So in our house, my mother came from a family where her mother didn't light. So when she got married, she also didn't light. And here they are 50 years later, just celebrated their 50th, she's still not lighting. So when one of my sisters got married, so my sister married a boy who was a Talmud of my father. And the first year on Hanukkah, my brother-in-law said, let's get you a menorah. And she said, what are you talking about? The women don't light. And she was like, you know, what's with this guy? And he said, what do you mean? Rav Shechter says you shall light. And she says, Rav Shechter does not say you shall light. So they got in a little bit of a discussion about it. And it turns out that my father does say that we should follow Rav Soloveitchik's opinion. That's why my wife and many of my married siblings, who are women, go ahead and light their own candles because of Soloveitchik's opinion was that ishto kugufo cannot be applied to the mitzvah of Neres Chanukah. Again, it's not because he was progressive, it's just because he didn't understand why we should apply the principle of ishto kugufo to this scenario. Why should it be applied to Neres Chanukah if it doesn't apply to anything else that a woman would be obligated to do? So that's just a very interesting idea that you might find interest in, and you might want to adopt, you might want to ignore. Either way, there are very credible sources on either side of the aisle. So either way you do it is all fine. Yes, questions?
Why can't you light a Hanukkah menorah on an airplane? Didn't Rav Shimon Shergill say that you could light a Hanukkah menorah on a train?
Who? Who said that?
Rav Shimon Shergill.
Rav Shalom Shvadron?
Yeah, he said that you could light a Hanukkah menorah.
Maybe he means if you're in a, like one of those fancy trains and you have your own room or you have a bed, something like that. No. A person has to light Hanukkah candles if it's their bias. But if it's not their bias, they can't light Hanukkah candles. We don't assume that a person who's on the Amtrak coming home from the city, can't light Hanukkah candles on there.
No. I think you meant that. I think you meant,
So that's different. If you have a bed and that's already considered your bias, maybe that might be a different story. But stam to light in a train, I don't think is at all permissible. Yeah.
One at a Sunday, 4 o'clock.
Yeah. No. You're better off starting the party at 4 o'clock because you're starting before the Zman Hadlaka, meaning so you did the right thing. You started before the Zman Hadlaka. Again, if a wedding starts at 3:30 in the afternoon, so you're starting before the Zman Hadlaka set in. So then you're already involved in another mitzvah, so the Neres Chanukah will come later on. But, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. How much time must you spend in the house with the candles lit before you can leave?
You can leave. It's just a safety concern. It's a safety concern. So again, what I told this person who has the 6 o'clock flight tonight or the 7 o'clock flight, I thought it was a mistake in the first place why a person would make such a flight. But, you know, it is what it is. So he came to me this morning and he asked me what he should do. I said, I think you should light at 5. You know, again, he was leaving, I think, at 5:15 to the airport. So you should light at 5 and have a neighbor who's going to be there and watch your candles until, you know, to make sure that nothing dangerous happens, that no candles fall down, that your house doesn't burn down, that there's not going to be anything hazardous about what you're doing. But I don't think that you should, I don't think you should just say, well, we're off to the airport, so therefore tonight we're not going to light. I don't think it's proper. I don't think it's proper. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What happens if you always light your own, but then you're out of town, you're not in the family's, you know, at a house where they give you one kind of chanukiah for the family, and so you're lighting a chanukiah. So yesterday, this happened to me yesterday. I said, well, let's. I'm going to go buy, go to Jamaica, I said, buy my own chanukiah, and I said, what if there's each look a goof of? I'm so insulted that you have to light your own. I said, well, I've been lighting my own my whole life. But is it, since I'm always lighting my own, shouldn't I have my own for this Hanukkah, even though I'm away?
Oh, you're visiting someone, you mean?
Visiting, yeah,
so achsanai is a big question. There's a question the Shulchan Aruch discusses what to do about an ach. Well, welcome. You're joining us. So there's a major question that the Shulchan Aruch talks about an achsanai. Somebody who's a guest in somebody else's home, the Shulchan Aruch says, is not really supposed to light. So you're supposed to be doing the candles along with the person who owns the house. And it says in Shulchan Aruch, you're supposed to be mishtatef bepruta. You're supposed to pay money to become one of the people, one of the stakeholders in the Hanukkah candles. So my father's always said, it's very strange, you're going to go and pay money like it's just a weird thing to do. So my father always says, all you're trying to do is to be kona shutvis. You're trying to have an ownership in the candles that they're going to light, and you're going to subscribe to be part of the lighting that they're going to do in that house. So my father always mentioned that you don't have to give the money. The Shulchan Aruch says, mishtate peputa for an achsanai, for someone who's a guest. So my father always says you can tell them that you want to light along with them, and you can make a kinyan by picking up the candle or the oil, meaning that will be the same way you have a kinyan hagbah, mashicha, you have a kinyan by picking something up, and you have in mind that you want to be kona, they have in mind that they want to be makna to you. You want to become a participant in the lighting of the house. But the Shulchan Aruch says someone who's an achsanai, someone who's a guest, is not supposed to be lighting their own candles. They're supposed to be along with everyone else. Now my father told me, when I was in the white shul, so we didn't live in Far Rockaway, but we used to go to my in-laws all the time for Shabbos. So I became a regular there. I was very comfortable by my in-laws. We were by them for Shabbos all the time, a few times a month. And, you know, Hanukkah always came around and we weren't sure what to do. Am I really considered an achsanai by my in-laws? Am I really a guest? Again, you're by your children. Are you really a guest by your children? Or do you say, no, this is your house? So that's the question. So I, you know, every year it evolved. I asked my father each year what I should do Hanukkah, and he said it depends how comfortable you are in their house. So the first year was one thing, and then the second year, whatever. And then later on, he said, look, you're there so often, and you're there for Shabbos all the time. So he said, would you go upstairs in your pajamas? Right? Would you go upstairs to the couches? We had a room downstairs where we always stayed. Would you go upstairs into the living room in your pajamas when everybody else is around? If so, then it means it's your house. It means you're one of the participants in the house like everybody else. If not, it means that you're still a guest. So that was the way he suggested. That was the way he explained it to me. That was the way to figure out whether somebody is still considered a guest or somebody is considered a real part of the household, if you would go upstairs. Again, we're not talking about people who would walk around in pajamas in the street. We're talking about somebody who otherwise would have the sensitivity not to do so. Somebody who otherwise would not wear their pajamas in a public place. But over here, this is considered to be enough of a private place that you would feel comfortable going up in your pajamas. So then my father thought that you're no longer considered to be a achsanai, then you're considered to be one of the B'nai Abayis, and you can light upstairs like everybody else is lighting. But otherwise, if you're just a guest who's coming into somebody else's home, let's say you have a Shever Brachas this Shabbos, and you're going to be staying at someone's house, so we would assume you should be Mishtatef Bepruta. You should either give them money to become part of the B'nai Abayis, or you should talk to them and say you want to participate in the lighting, you don't want to light on your own, and you should ask them to be makna to you, the oil and the menorah, that you can participate along with everybody else. So we've discussed about the prohibition to eat, to be engaged in eating before performing any of these various mitzvahs that we do throughout the year. What about tasting? What about snacking on something? Is that also forbidden? Or do you say, no, to eat the Kit Kat, to eat the Reese's, to drink the soda, you're not going to get carried away. You're not going to forget to do the Neiros Chanukah just because you're engaged in some snack. The concern is, if you're going to have a meal, and nowadays we all have our meals, and we have four-course meals, and then we have the dessert, and then we have the schmoozing, so we have all this, so maybe you're going to get so carried away, you're going to forget about the mitzvah, but stop to go take a snack is not a problem. So this is the question. You'll be surprised, the Gemara says in Brachas Daf Chav Ches, don't get nervous, we don't paskin this way, but the Gemara says, Amar Bishu ben Levi, this is number Ches on the source sheet. Kiven she yigiyas man tfilas mincha, once the time for the mitzvah comes along, asur lo le'adam sheyitam klum, you're not allowed to even have a snack, says the Gemara. So right away the Gemara says, hey, that's going a little too far. We don't accept that opinion of Rabbi Shimon Levi. That is too extreme. Person is allowed to have a snack. Now Tosa says, what does it mean we don't accept that? What does it mean we don't go that far? What does it mean that's too extreme? So Tosa says, well, it's too extreme that we don't accept it that far. We don't accept that you're not allowed to snack before going ahead and doing your mitzvah, but we do accept that you're not allowed to have a meal before going ahead and doing your mitzvah. So that's generally the way the Shulchan Aruch paskins. That's clear. Shulchan Aruch writes in many, many places, Reish Lamed Gimel, he has in Tav Kaf Kuf Ayin Hey, all over the place the Shulchan Aruch writes by all these various mitzvahs that although we don't allow a person to sit down to a meal when it's time to perform a mitzvah or a half hour in advance, but a person is allowed to snack or drink on anything because we're not concerned that you're going to be carried away by just taking a snack. However, the Stei Chemed and the Chai Adam and the Mishnah Berurah and Tafresh Nun Beis and all the Achronim that we would generally rely on for anything else in our lives all say that although it says strictly in Shulchan Aruch that you're allowed to do that, says the Stei Chemed, we could read it together. I forgot to put a number here. It's after number Ches. Mikal Makom, he says, Af ima ikara din mutter, although the Shulchan Aruch says clearly that one is allowed to have a snack before performing the mitzvah, and we're not concerned that you're going to get carried away with the Reese's or the chocolate bar or the soda. However, says the Stei Chemed, Kvar pashad haminig lahachmer b'shnei yamim harishonim, says the Stei Chemed, when it comes to shaking the lulav, Ein shosim shum mashke mishe'ol amud ha-shachar, kodem sheyivarchu al netilas lulav. We're careful, says the Stei Chemed, even though strictly in Shulchan Aruch it says you're allowed to have a snack, and it says you're allowed to eat something, and even if it's mezonos, as long as it's a snack and not a meal, it's okay. But he says, although the Shulchan Aruch says that, we should all be careful. The minig has developed the practices in our communities that we're careful not even to taste anything, not even to have a snack at that time, because we don't want to make a mistake and forget about the mitzvah that is at hand. We don't want to make a mistake and neglect the Neiros Chanukah that we have to light, or the shofar that we have to blow, or the various mitzvahs that we have to do. And this is reiterated not only in the Stei Chemed, but it's written also in the Chai Adam and the Mishneh Berurah, that although the Shulchan Aruch says clearly that te'ima is permissible, that to take a snack of something is allowed, however, we should try our best not to if it is not absolutely necessary. So this is, until this point, we've been talking about eating or drinking before various mitzvahs. Now, what about before davening? What about before davening? Now, here, there's a major monkey wrench. Over here, the Gemara seems to say the nature of the prohibition to eat before davening is a little bit different than the nature of the prohibition before any other mitzvah, as we will see. We begin with the Gemara in Brachas Daf Yud. The Gemara says in Brachas on Daf Yud, this is number 10 on the bottom of the sheet, we learn from a pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim that states, Lo sochlu al hadam. Now, how do you translate that pasuk? Don't eat over the blood. So the Rishonim and the Gemara have a very difficult time understanding what is Pshuto Shel Mikra. What is the simple meaning of those words? What does it mean? So some of the Rishonim say, you know what it means? They used to have a pagan practice that everybody would sit in a circle and they would shecht an animal and they would put the blood in the middle of the circle and they would light a fire or whatever it was and they would offer the blood as the sacrifice to their god. So the Gemara warns us, the Pasuk is saying, L'sachal al adam, don't do the practice of non-Jews who serve Avodah Zarah, and don't sit around in a circle and have the blood in the middle of the circle. Okay, that's not relevant for all of us. We never heard of such a thing. Is that really what the Pasuk means? Is that really the simple meaning of the Pasuk? Probably not. Not clear exactly what it means. So the Gemara here has a level of interpretation that also doesn't seem to be the simple meaning, but somehow it's derived from the Pasuk as well. Says the Gemara, what does it mean? L'sachlu kodem shetispalalu al dimchem. What it means, lo sochlu al adam, don't eat on the blood, it means don't eat before you pray for your blood. Don't eat before you pray for your own well-being, for your own body. And the Gemara continues, kala ocha v'shosa v'achar kach mispalel. If someone goes ahead and eats or drinks before they daven, alav hakasav omer, the pasuk says about them, v'osi hishlachta acharei gavecha. You threw me, you decided to remember about me, God says, after you pampered yourself, after you went ahead and took care of yourself, you satisfied your own needs, you gratified yourself, you catered to yourself, and he says, "Altikre gavecha elegecha." This is hubris of you. This is arrogant. This is disdainful that you're standing up and taking care of yourself, and then after you're done taking care of yourself, then you say, "Oh, by the way, God, I remember, I'm supposed to be davening to you. I forgot all about it." So God says this is a very arrogant thing to do. This is an arrogant approach. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, La'achar shenizgah hazeh, after this person pampers themselves and satisfies themselves and gratifies himself and does everything, then, oh, kibbalah laval ma'achar shemayim, oh, then I remember, I have to say kriyashma, I have to daven. So says the Gemara, this is why one is not allowed to eat before they daven. So there's a story that Reb Zevin has in the Sipuri Chasidim, a very amusing story. I think it's a powerful message. We don't have to read the whole thing inside. We'll just read the end of it. So there's a story there that he writes about a chassid who lost his rebbe. The rebbe passed away, and the chassid was searching. There was a fight in the chassidus about who's going to be the new rebbe, and he didn't want to get involved. He decided he's going to go search for his own rebbe. So he starts traveling around the different shtetlach in Europe to try to find his own rebbe. Gets to a town, they say, oh, we have a tzaddik in this town. This should be your rebbe. This is the one you should choose. Just come watch him daven. You'll be convinced. So, okay, he comes to watch him daven, and he's so carried away. He sees the rebbe is davening with such kavanah, with so much intensity, and he's very taken by this rebbe, and he decides, you know, it's what to consider. I should think about him. So, after the tefillah, look at what he writes here. La'achar ha-tefillah. It's about 10 lines from the bottom, the beginning of a sentence. La'achar ha-tefillah, after this very intense davening experience was over, panah ha-chassad ala rabbi she'elo. So this chassad turns to the rebbe, and he says to him, Hallo mitzvos v'neshmartem l'nafsho seichem hi gam kein mitzvah haksuva b'Torah. Look, you're taking your davening very seriously, I understand, but there's also a mitzvah to take care of yourself. So you're going so long, you're extending your davening so long, and you haven't eaten breakfast yet. Isn't it harmful to your body? So why aren't you concerned? I understand you're a big tzaddik, but why aren't you concerned about your well-being also, that you're extending the davening this long? Hey Shiva, our Rav, listen carefully. The Rav said back to him, and he said, "Mimanavshach, im Hakadosh Baruch Hu ozer shehatfila tia karai. If God is going to listen to my prayers and actually answer what I ask for, mizet tzarach lechol. I am so elated over the fact that God is willing to listen to me. Who can even think about eating? Who can even think about eating? I just won the jackpot. The first thing you do when you win the lottery is you go and you eat. Or he says." V'im chas v'shalom lav, if God turns my tefillah away and says, I'm not interested in hearing from you because I don't think that the tefillah that you offered was acceptable, and I don't think what you said to me was sincere, and I don't think what you're asking for is reasonable, mizeh yachol lechol. Who's even able to eat at that time? So when you're in the balance, this Rebbe taught us, when you're in the balance and you don't know, is my life actually going to be successful today? Is my day going to be a good day? Or am I going to be inflicted with all the pain and with all the suffering and with all the issues and God's not going to listen to my prayers? Who can even think about eating? So he's just giving us a perspective that the Gemara doesn't mean to say we're just restricting a person not to eat before you daven. It's not just that it's arrogant. It's that who can even have a mindset of eating at a time when you don't know what's going to be with your life? On the one hand, life could be amazing. On the other hand, after my davening, I can find out life is going to be awful. And who can eat at a time when that's what's on their mind, when that's what they're troubled with? Just think it gives a very fresh perspective to this Gemara about why one is not allowed to eat before davening. Not only does the Gemara say because it's an act of disdain, it's an act of arrogance, it's an act of hubris, it's showing God that you don't care enough about him, that you're willing to take care of all your own things before you take care of him, but this is something that he gives a perspective that I think is what to consider, what to think about. Let's just hold off on the questions for a minute. So there are a number of ways, so to speak, to get around some of these issues. Again, the Shulchan Aruch says clearly you're not allowed to eat before you daven, you're not allowed to eat before you do a given mitzvah. But there are a number of suggestions that are given. So one suggestion that's given of how to get around this problem is the Rama himself writes in Siman Reish Lamed Beis that as long as you set up a shomer, as long as you set up a person who's going to be designated to remind you that you should not forget to do your mitzvah, that is going to be good enough to get around the problem. So say, for example, I have a wedding, and I'm not going to be able to light Hanukkah candles. I'll be home by 10:30, 11 o'clock on a good night. So I'll be home by 10:30, 11 o'clock. So I have one of my older children is going to be home, and you set them as a designated person to remind you that you should light the Hanukkah candles when you get home. Now, that's what the Rama says, but it's a highly questionable psak of the Rama. The later Acharonim think that the Rama is incorrect in his assumption that you're allowed to have a designated shaliach, that you're allowed to have a designated reminder, because they say that some of the sources seem to indicate that a designated shaliach is still not going to be good enough because often that shaliach will fall asleep. Let's say you get home from the wedding at 11:30 or 11:45 later than you expected and the person already went to sleep. They're not going to remind you. They're not going to be awake. Or they go out with their friends and by the time you get home, they're not going to be home anymore. So this is something that's very questionable. Again, the Rama clearly does say that it's a heter that you're allowed to rely on, but the later Acharonim seem to have major, major issues with relying only on that. There are those who argue that if, let's say, somebody davens, so we have a major problem. Let's say the Zman of Mincha is 1 o'clock these days. So I work in an office. I'm not always able to stop everything I'm doing at 1 o'clock to go daven Mincha. Not only that, let's say we have a Mincha in our office at 3 o'clock every day. So what are you going to tell me? I'm not allowed to eat or do any work from 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock because you have to wait to daven Mincha? Well, the Shulchan Aruch says you're not allowed to do any Malacha before you go ahead and perform the mitzvah of davening Mincha. So what am I supposed to do? I shouldn't eat lunch at 12:30 at 1 o'clock, and I shouldn't go ahead and do any work from 1 to 3? That's unreasonable. So the Bach and many others suggest that a person who has a minyan kavua that they daven at every single day, and they know that they're always going to daven there, and they know that there's no change in schedule, that's what they do, and they schedule the meetings around that. So you have nothing to be concerned about. You're allowed to do malacha, you're allowed to eat, you're allowed to do anything before you daven mincha, because we know that every day you're going to be davening at the same minyan. Now, that works, and let's say that's the rationale in all the yeshivas, that they daven Maariv at 10 o'clock after night seder, and they have dinner at 6:30, even though nobody's daven Maariv yet. However, that works in a yeshiva setting where they have a minyan every night at 10 o'clock, and that's where everybody's supposed to be davening. But say in our shul, where we have a minyan every half an hour starting 6 o'clock, so the way it works by us most of the time is you daven when it's convenient for you. So I'll daven tonight at the 6:30 minyan, and tomorrow night I'll daven at the 8:30 minyan, and every time you're going to decide where you're going to daven depending on your schedule of that evening. So that it becomes more problematic. You don't have a minyan kavua. It's not like you're davening every night at the same time. So this is very questionable. Does that heter apply when you don't have a minyan that's set that every day you're going to daven in? Again, if the law office, if your office has a minyan that you daven at every single day, then maybe there's room to assume that this heter is acceptable. But if you're davening in a place where you just daven on convenience, so that gets into the issue. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach spoke about, let's say, setting an alarm clock, or nowadays having a reminder on a cell phone. So Shlomo Zalman Auerbach questioned whether or not that would be sufficient. As we all know, sometimes when the reminder goes off on your cell phone, we all know that there's a snooze button and you don't pay attention to the reminder. Or you just say, oh, this annoying phone, and you don't pay attention to the reminder that's being set for you. Or your phone happens not to be with you at that time. I don't know about you, but my kids play with the phones all the time. And they turn on reminders and turn off reminders, and they're doing things that I don't want them to do. But that's what happens. A reminder doesn't always work. So Shlomo Zalman questions the heter, and he says he's not sure exactly whether or not an alarm clock or a cell phone will really be sufficient, because very often, as we know, you sleep through or you don't pay attention to the reminder. So again, these are all heterim that are mentioned by the Achronim, by the Rama, by the Mechaber, but they're all very questionable. Each one of them has a very shaky leg to stand on. And the real Ikar HaDin is that a person should not be engaged in anything else. At the time of performing a mitzvah, a person should really be focused on that. Now, because we assume the Gemara says that the prohibition of eating before davening Shachris, is that we're concerned that it's like hubris, that it's considered like to be arrogant. Osi hishlachti achare gavecha, you're throwing me after you go and pamper yourself, now you remind yourself about the presence of God. Because we assume that that's the nature of the prohibition of eating before Shachris, therefore the Achronim write, the Hakos Maimini and the Beis Yosef, the Shulchan Aruch quotes this, that water would not be included in that prohibition. Because mayim ein bahem mishum gaiva, you go ahead and you take some drink of water, that's not considered to be hubris, that's not considered to be arrogant to take a cup of water when you wake up in the morning before you daven. That's not a problem at all. And that's what the Shulchan Aruch says clearly. And similarly, the Shulchan Aruch says if a person has a medical condition and they have to take a pill and they need food with that pill, the reason why you're eating right now is not because you feel any sense of arrogance, it's not because you are not concerned at all about the davening, but rather because your physical needs call for that, because your health needs you to do that. And therefore the Shulchan Aruch says in a case like that, this would not be included. So now the question is, well, how far does this category of water go? What if you have flavored water? So flavored water, as we would call today, is coffee. So what about a coffee before davening? So again, so to take a shower before davening, it depends why you're taking the shower. So if you're taking the shower because it's going to wake you up, it's going to make you look fresher, it's going to make you look more presentable for the davening, absolutely, you're allowed to do that. That's litzara hatvila. That's like taking the medication before you daven. But if you're taking the shower because you decide that you want to go to the gym at 7 o'clock in the morning before you daven, that's certainly not permissible. To go to the gym before you daven is not allowed. And to take the shower after you sweat from the gym is not allowed either. So you're supposed to be really doing davening, prioritizing the davening, doing that first. So again, the Chafetz Chaim told his children, and my father says this all the time, nobody should feel uncomfortable if they're taking care of their young children in the morning and they don't get around to daven. Again, we've been mentioning the last couple of weeks that davening is so important and it takes such a primacy in our lives, but yet I'm getting my kids off to school. What should I do? I got a lot of emails the last few weeks like, what do you want me to do? You know, like, I've been very inspired by the fact that davening is very important, but what can I do? I'm getting the kids off. So my father always told us that the Gemara says, the Psukim say that Avraham Avinu There were many reasons why HaKadosh Baruch Hu should love Avraham Avinu. After all, he was the first person to believe in God. He was the first person to recognize God. He was the biggest Machnas Oros. He was the first person to have a yeshiva. He was the first Baal Tshuva movement. He did a lot of things that were pretty amazing. And yet, the Pasuk says, why does God love Avraham Avinu? Ki yedativ, why do I love him? Lemano she yitzava esbano es beis aracher. Because he took the mitzvah of chinuch seriously. Not because of anything else. Not because he was a God-fearing Jew. Not because he had the first kir of yeshiva in the world. Not because he was the biggest Machnas Oros that we've ever known. But because he took the mitzvah of chinuch seriously, and he understood that his obligation, his primary obligation in life, is to be mechanech his children. So my father told us the same thing. There's nothing to be uncomfortable about. You're involved, you're engaged in the greatest mitzvah you can ever do, greater than anything else. There's no reason to feel uncomfortable if you don't have time to daven. You don't have time to daven because you're doing that mitzvah of chinuch. That's what you should be doing. There's a reason why women are not obligated to mitzvah sasei shazman grama, in time-bound mitzvahs, because the obligation of being mechanech children is more important than anything. That's the most important mitzvah in the world. And, you know, I was talking to my father recently about Aliyah. And again, you know, there's questions. Everybody at least should deal with the issue. Should we be making Aliyah? Should we not? I happen to feel very uncomfortable being in America. And every time I visit Eretz Israel, it makes me more and more uncomfortable. And especially when I'm offered a job in Israel. I'm like, how do I not go, right? So I was just talking to my father about it. And he said, look, you know, the chinuch options are very questionable for Americans who move to Eretz Israel. Again, not for everybody. It depends who you are and what you are and what you want to do. But if it's going to compromise in any way the chinuch of your children to move to Eretz Israel, my father and Rav Asher Weiss also agreed. Again, everybody has to make their own cheshbon for their own family and know exactly how it's going to work and whether it's good for them or not. But my father and Rav Asher Weiss both felt the same way, that if it's going to compromise the chinuch of your children, Eretz Yisrael does not take a precedence. The most important mitzvah in the Torah is the mitzvah of chinuch habanim, is the mitzvah to take responsibility for our children and give them the greatest Jewish opportunity they can have. Now again, maybe that is in Eretz Yisrael, maybe it's not. So every family has to figure that out on their own, but it doesn't mean that to compromise your children's chinuch, you can move to Eretz Yisrael. That mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is not more important than chinuch, because chinuch is the one that comes before anything else. So this is something that we have to take very seriously, and again, if it means that a person is not going to be able to daven in the morning, so it means we don't daven in the morning. That's our primary obligation. So what about, where did we start? We said that the Shulchan Aruch says to drink water is not considered to be pampering oneself, and so too to take a shower before davening, if it's going to make you fresh, if it's going to make you more alert, more awake, it's also not a problem. So the Pri Chadash in the 1600s, and then further the discussion continued by the Chida in the 1800s, they discuss, well, what about a coffee? So they say, well, the coffee you're certainly allowed to drink because you're going to drink it to wake yourself up, but you're not allowed to put sugar in it. That's certainly not permissible. So again, that's the opinion of the 1600s and the 1800s. The more contemporary Achronim say, the more present-day opinions feel that, no, you're allowed to have the coffee together with the sugar, together with the milk, because otherwise it's going to be too... I never drank a coffee in my life. I don't know what it tastes like. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it does to you. I seem to be awake without it. But the common practice in the Achronim that they mention is, no, since the coffee nowadays is going to be too sharp, it's going to be, I don't know what you call it, it's too bitter, too strong to have without the milk or without the sugar. So now, if we assume that a person's allowed to have coffee in order to wake themselves up, in order to be more alert, in order to be more concentrated, so then they're allowed to have it with the sugar and with the milk as well. But I do think, again, I didn't see this in Svarim, but I do think there's room to question ourselves. If the Achronim originally said, you're allowed to have water, and then we extend water to mean tea and coffee, and then we extend tea and coffee to mean with sugar and with milk, that all makes sense to me. I understand that, because it's all to help us. But to use the, you know, fancy French presses and all the things that we have, I don't know. I haven't seen it in Svarim, but it makes me wonder, like, is that really what's necessary to wake you up? Or is that really being arrogant? Is that really what the Gemara says, that osi hishlachta acharei gavecha? You're really taking care of yourself. I don't know. Again, I don't drink coffee. I have no idea. But I think that it would suffice if, let's say, we had the coffee without all the fancy flavors and without all the fancy things, I would imagine that would probably be good enough to wake ourselves up. Again, we would enjoy the coffee a lot more if it's, you know, to our liking and to our fancy and exactly the way we want it. But one should consider a little bit before doing so that, in the first place, already the Shulchan Aruch says that water is what's permissible. And then that trickle down to be coffee without sugar. And then that trickle down to be coffee with sugar and milk. So again, should we trickle that down even further and say coffee with sugar and milk and flavors and French presses and ice cream in it and everything else? I don't know. I'm not convinced of that fact, but I think that it's what to consider. So Rav Soloveitchik was of the opinion, Rav Soloveitchik said, and with this I guess we'll wrap up the shiur quickly. Rav Soloveitchik said, if you'll notice, the Rambam, when he talks about prohibition to eat before davening, he throws in something that seems to be a little bit different than the prohibition by all other mitzvahs. Let's look at number Yud Aleph. The Rambam writes, in Hilchos Tefila that before davening Shachris, Asur la la'adam sheyitom klum, a person is not allowed to eat or taste anything, or sheyasa malacha, or go to the gym, or do any malacha before davening. Now again, somebody asked last night, and it's a very good question. So this woman said, but I like to work out in the morning. Now I understand you like to work out in the morning. So she said, can I get up early in the morning before this man of Shachris sets in? Now she's a very dedicated woman. Either dedicated to her exercise or dedicated to God. But either way, that's certainly permissible. If you get up early enough when the Zman of Shachris has not yet set in, then certainly you're allowed to do so. Certainly you're allowed to do so. That's not a question at all. And again, we'll talk in the coming weeks about how much of davening we should prioritize. If we only have a limited amount of time, what we should daven and what we shouldn't. That's a very important question a lot of people have been wondering about. So we'll try to talk about that in the coming weeks as well. But on the face value, if a person, again, if you have young children, it's a different story. But on face value, if you're a person who really doesn't have, you know, one of the women took serious offense to what I said last night, that I said if you don't have such important things to take care of in the morning, then maybe the davening should take precedence. So she said, which woman has not important things that they're taking care of in the morning? There's no such thing. Again, I'm not a woman. I don't know. But, you know, she said everything is very important. I don't know. Could be. Could be. I don't know that going to the gym is the most important thing in the world. I don't know that going to the coffee shop is from the, you know, Dvarim Ha'om de Merumah Shalolim. It might be. But everybody has to judge for themselves. I'm not judging anybody else. You have to know for yourself. But if you're dealing with things that might not be so important, so davening really should be done first. Again, at least a certain portion of the davening, at least something that you should be mekabel al malchus shemayim, say brachas first or something, to show that you're not just disregarding God's presence. So the Rambam here, before eating, before Shachris, the Rambam uses the terminology asur lo la'adam. It's absolutely forbidden to eat or drink or taste anything before davening Shachris. However, when it comes to eating before davening Mincha or Maariv, the Rambam here changes, and he says, well, if a person's going to come home from a long day at work or a long day in the city or a long day vacationing or whatever it is, then they're going to come home and they're going to be exhausted. And they're going to say, you know what, let me just take a little nap, let me take a little snack, let me rest a little bit. I had a long, exhausting day and very difficult meetings, and I didn't do well in business today. And then I'll go to shul. Well, we all know what happens. I don't know about you, but I lay with my son sometimes at night. And an hour and a half later, I wake up and I don't know what just happened. I fell asleep, he's still up, right? So sometimes it happens that that we take a little nap and we're not really expecting to sleep and we do fall asleep. So that's what the Rambam says. Ibn Khamar, he doesn't say the terminology of usr, he doesn't say it's absolutely forbidden. He says, well, we have a concern, maybe you're going to get carried away or you'll fall asleep longer than you expected to, or you're going to get too involved in the snack that you're having, and then you're going to forget about davening Maariv or Mincha. So Rav Soloveitchik pointed out that there's a marked distinction between the prohibition to eat before other mitzvahs that we perform, Neiros Chanukah and Tekiyah Shofar and everything else, and Mincha and Maariv, versus eating before Shachris. Eating before Shachris, the Gemara says, is absolutely usur. It's absolutely forbidden, not because we're concerned you're going to forget about Shachris, but rather because osi hishlachta acharei gavecha. How are you not concerned? How is the first priority for you in the morning not that you should realize and recognize God's presence in your life? That's what the Gemara says, and that's what the Rambam says, absolutely usur. However, when it comes to eating before any of these other mitzvahs, the Rambam formulates it and he says, no, it's because we're concerned maybe you'll get carried away and you'll forget. Maybe you'll take a nap and you'll forget about the fact that you're supposed to be performing the mitzvah that you're meant to do at this point. And therefore, that's why we find in many other areas, when it comes to any of these other mitzvahs, Neiros Chanukah or anything else, that really, strictly speaking, the Shulchan Aruch says that to taste something, to snack something, or to do something light at the time of the mitzvah would really be permissible, because the concern by those mitzvahs is not that you're being arrogant, it's not that you're disregarding God, but rather the concern is that you're going to forget and you're going to get carried away with what it is that you're doing, and you're not going to remember to do the mitzvah that you're supposed to do. When it comes to that, that's why we generally assume that you're allowed to take a snack, you're allowed to do these other little things. There is a fascinating question. What about somebody, let's say in Eretz Yisrael, I have a coffee shop and there are a lot of chilonim who have no plans, no intention on davening at all. Do I have to tell them, oh, sorry, you can't have a coffee today because you didn't daven yet? So is that my prohibition of lifnei iver? Am I setting them up for a disaster by having the coffee shop? Because I know that a lot of people are going to come in who haven't davened yet and who don't plan to daven at all. So this is discussed in the Acharonim, and I think it's very reasonable to assume that no, the whole prohibition that the Gemara says about not eating before davening is only if you have in mind to daven. So let's say you have a woman in the morning who's taking care of the kids, who's running out of the house, who's doing a million and one things. She's not going to be able to daven, which is fine. You're not going to tell her she can't have the coffee and she can't eat breakfast. Of course she's allowed to. Why? Because if you have no plans on davening, then there's no prohibition to eat before the davening. And similarly over here, for better or for worse, a lot of the chilonim don't even know about davening. They're not planning on davening because they don't know about God. They don't know anything about this whole area of our lives. So you're going to say that they're not allowed to have the coffee before they daven? Of course they're allowed to have the coffee before they daven. They don't intend to daven at all, so therefore there's no prohibition for them not to eat before the davening. And similarly, if a person's a chola, let's say you're sick in bed and you're not going to be able to daven for whatever reason, you're in the hospital or you can't get out of bed, you can't have the requisite kavana to daven. So in a case like that, there'd be no prohibition to eat before the davening at all, because we assume the whole prohibition was only said in order to encourage people to take care of the obligation that they have on their heads. But if you don't have an obligation for whatever reason, you're taking care of the family or you're doing whatever you have to do, so we would assume that the prohibition would not be applicable at all. Amir Tzashem, next week, we will...